and welcome to the Tech and Toast podcast. We simplify the way you buy and manage your hospitality tech. You can click through to techontoast.community where you can search our marketplace, attend our events, grab your free tech audit, and we will help you visualize your tech stack as you grow into 2024. Meanwhile, summer in Australia.
Hey, Louis, do you think we should sponsor the Tech on Toast podcast? I mean, I really like Chris, and I really like what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that's a ripper idea, LP. It's a perfect fit for what we do at Red Cat.
I mean, I agree. I'm just not sure how we get our message across around, like, Red Cat specializing in multi-site groups, you know, like cafe groups and fast casual groups and QSRs and all that.
Maybe we mention some of our customers like Nando's in Australia, New Zealand, the restaurants at the Aussie Open, Boost Juice International. I mean, they've got over 700 sites.
Hang on. I think that was the sponsors. This is the Tech on Toast podcast. Enjoy the show.
Okay. All right. Welcome to the next episode of the Tech on Toast podcast. And this week, we're delighted to be joined by Brent Krause, Chief Revenue Officer at Seven Rooms. Brent, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to BrewDog in London.
Yeah.
It's a good venue, right? It's big.
Yeah, it's an amazing venue. First and foremost, I'm a huge fan of the microbrews.
Oh, are you really? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Have you seen their mini brewery then in the corner?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When I came in, and I actually did them a favor, one of the sliding glass doors were open.
Right.
Okay. And I saw it left open, so I shut it for them.
That's
to make
good
sure,
of you. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To help them out. I haven't tried it, but I'm really excited to try it.
Well, I think if they know you're here, they'll definitely give you a sample. We'll speak to Emily afterwards. I'm sure she'll help you.
Perfect.
And what are you doing in London? Are you on a trip over or?
I am. Yeah. We just hosted our first inaugural customer event.
Wow. Okay.
Which was amazing. Had some great brands, restaurants, JKS Group, Shum, Nobu.
Some Hilton, of the best there.
Some of the best. And we hosted our first customer event, and we did it in London.
We're honored. Thank you.
Well, you know, we did that on purpose because we've got such great partnerships here. And the restaurant space here is very tech forward.
Yeah. I always ask this question to anybody who comes on the podcast who isn't from the UK. I always say to me, you know, what's the difference? But that is we're quite mature, I would say, in terms of what we're doing.
Yeah. Mature, tech forward, and always with this immense sense of hospitality.
Yeah.
How can they deliver the best possible experience? And they're really also, I would say, willing to try new things to try to deliver that kind of that sense of magic, if you will.
Yeah.
And they're very curious and they really want to embrace that technology.
And I guess they push you on the product, right? We'll talk about the product in a minute, but I guess they kind of...
Yeah, during the happy hour, I got
pushed. Did you get cornered?
Yeah. Absolutely. Got a lot of requests in the process.
But yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's like a big customer, what's it called, when you do the little workshops, when they a review, when they're kind of sitting there giving you all that feedback.
Yeah.
And for you, it's invaluable.
Well, it was awesome. So we had a great group of people. We had a panel. Sherry Kimes also came in, who's been a leader in the hospitality innovation space, professor at Cornell. Jay Rayner was in there as well. So that was a lot of fun listening to his
causing
speech
trouble,
in front
no
of me.
Doubt. Yeah.
eclectic individual, you know, very bright. It was in a really great agnostic kind of approach around the industry and thoughts, and it was wonderful.
Love that. Yeah. And where are you from then, Brent? What's your background? Tell us a little bit about, you know, you. Well, I was just asking about your surname. Where's that originate from?
So my first name is actually hyphenated, Brent Stieg, and then Krause. So if we've got about an hour, I can tell you the background.
Can you shorten it? It's like a minute.
Yeah. Long story long. The last name comes from my father. I was adopted.
Right.
So
okay.
I get a little bit of that, but I'm Swedish. Traditionally, like
I can see it now. Yeah.
So that's where that name comes from. So Brent Stieg, but I just go with Brent because everybody always screws it up. They put the hyphenation on the back or the end, so it's fine.
Yeah, I saw it on LinkedIn this morning. I was like, oh God, why not another one? And I'm famous for ruining my introductions on that. So look, let's talk a little bit about the product because how long have you been at Seven Rooms?
I just hit my 2-year anniversary.
Wow, congratulations. Yeah. Do you get a
cheers.
I mean, you've got a mug from me, so that's
yeah, I got a mug,
your
so.
Tech on Toast mug. That's your celebration. And I suppose the competitor landscape that you sit in reservations originally, is busy, right? It's a packed marketplace. How are you guys, I suppose, finding a way to stand out from that?
It's a great question and something we spend a lot of time around. And part of that is also finding ways to help our restaurants deliver the best possible experience. And a big part of that is actually giving the restaurants the ability to own the data.
Yeah.
Giving them the ability to own the experience. And it's interesting. There's a lot of discussion around data, right? Having all the data in the world isn't going to help you. You know,
no, it can become a hindrance. Maybe.
It can become a hindrance, right? It's like, how do you optimize that data? How do you make the data actionable so that our restaurant partners, hotels, can provide the best possible experience to the consumer? Because that's what the consumer wants,
yeah.
Right? They want that sense of belonging. You know, they want to come back. They want to have that moment where they feel special. And that's really how we differentiate ourselves in a lot of different ways, right? So it's helping the restaurants not only create those moments of magic, but how do we help those restaurants also reach back out to those consumers that have come in maybe once that they want to bring back? So like, how do you bring those butts back in seats? Then how do you really treat your VIPs and your locals? And how do you understand the data behind them so you can provide those types of experiences? And I think that's how we really separate ourselves, is we are always operator first mentality, right? That's the most important thing. And, you know, coming out, I'm a bit fired up, honestly, coming off of our inaugural, you know, customer event, because such a passionate group of individuals, the hospitality space, like their drive is, how can we provide the best possible experience? How can we optimize our technology so that we can do this? And so when we think about the product itself, we're always thinking about, how do we give our operators the best possible opportunity to deliver these moments of magic? And at the end of the day, drive revenue. I mean, heck, it's there's always challenges right now.
Always.
Right? I mean, so we're just working with them in this process and trying to make it and simplify their life as much as possible.
And I think I spent some time in the States with Hard Rock back in when I was younger. Mm. We used to call it this corner bar mentality, especially in Boston and those kind of areas. You walk in the, you know, the corner boozer or the corner bar, and that the kind of the beer would spin down the bar to you because they kind of knew you because you were local or whatever, or you've been in once before and they remembered you. And that's what we're trying to recreate, right? Create that mentality where I've been in once to your restaurant, maybe even 2 years ago, right? But it was a certain date and maybe I'm prompted to come back in and do it again.
That is, everybody loves that. If it's someone remembering your name, you know, yeah. Right? If it's, I mean, how about remembering that you don't like ice yeah. in your drink? That is a moment,
yeah.
right? Like creating those moments that makes people feel special. But it also drives, the consumer behavior has changed too. We want to be loyal. I mean, you think of, like I'm American Airlines, ride or die, right? No matter what, even if that, you know, if I'm flying with the chickens, I'm going to go American Airlines because I'm loyal to them. Now I want a good experience.
It's so strange though, isn't it?
That, oh, it's so strange.
That we are attached. I mean, Apple, am I like... I mean, I'm going to be bankrupt because of them. It's, yeah. it's literally a yeah. problem.
100%. And so, you know, Bonvoy is the same way. We also Marriott, one of our partners, but they do a great job in trying to deliver that experience yeah. and process too. So people want that feeling of belonging, right? And that's a hard thing to do because you can have the information and the data. Then how do you deliver that information to the front of house? So the front of house knows exactly who's coming in, what their preference is, and how to make that person feel special. And that's a big piece. That
how do you do
back.
That? Does the product support doing that then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a tagging system that automates tags. So because we can tie back in and integrate with your POS system, we can identify, you know, spend of someone coming in. So, you know, Chris, you're coming in, Nobu, and you're there, you know, four times spending a certain amount of money. So, you know, maybe they're listed, you know, you're automatically tagged as a VIP. So when you come in, they make sure that maybe there's availability readily for you. They know your preferences. They know your allergies. And it's giving that information. We can actually push that back to the front of house. So when you come in and you put your reservation online, you're already tagged and you're in the system.
Yeah.
So they know exactly how to treat you. And I think that's a big part of what differentiates ourselves from everybody else in the market.
And I remember, again, harping back to the American days, actually, we used to do a pre-shift was a big part of our day, right? So we'd have a... All around the world, it was 10:45, 4:05, no matter way, you know, whether you were in Mexico, whether you're in London. And pre-shift, that, we didn't have that information then. We didn't have that data to be able to kind of drive our kind of decision-making, but we did it by gut. You know, we kind of, oh, Mrs. Smith's coming out, and some clever person on the bar or someone remembered them from, you know, 6 months ago. So that's really powerful to sit in those meetings prior to shift and understanding that what's going to happen.
Oh, the pre-shift is so impactful. So important, in fact, that we actually built a part of our product that's specifically around pre-shift. So we've actually gone and witnessed some of our partners pulling up our pre-shift. So they're working through their whole team as they go through the pre-shift. I understand who's coming in, what the availability is. And we created this automation for them because everybody's so busy with less resources.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very true.
I mean, there's a million things, staffing and optimizing the people that you have. So we heard our customers understanding that this was a challenge and a pain. So that we built this into the product. So we make that pre-shift as easy as possible so that you know who's coming in, when they're coming in, what the covers are looking like. And to simplify that process a bit, because that's a big piece.
Yeah, because we do things twice a lot.
Yeah.
Or we did do things twice a lot. And I think when automation came in, I think that things improved, but it's almost like we've got this other distraction coming along sometimes with everything we do. And the pre-shift's a really great example of something that should happen every day in a restaurant or a service establishment, which can be, you know, if they're having to write the sheet out or create one on their computer, but they've actually got it there on your product, right? Which pulls off all the relevant data anyway. Yeah. And still drives the shift.
That's right. That's right. I was speaking with Maris of Sushi House last night, and Chris, she said the same thing you did, which is there's the science, and then there's a little bit of the art, right? But the art comes from the ability to have all that science and infrastructure behind you. Then you can go from the gut a little bit, because there is a little bit of both, right? Yeah. Because you have to know, you know, the restaurant and understand the nuances of it, right? And that's the art piece. But having the science and the data, the information to help you get through it, that's the game changer.
It's huge. And I spend a lot of my time explaining to you what we do prior to you coming in. And we spend a lot of time talking to operators about their tech stack, generally the mid-market brands. And their problem, they know their business inside out. Mm-hmm. These guys built it, right? And they've got great people on the ground. Their frustration is that they're getting distracted, I suppose, by technology that comes in that isn't integrating, that isn't helping them move them forward, or is perhaps becoming a barrier to what they wanted to achieve in the first place. Is that something, I mean, you said you're very operator-centric. Is that kind of at the front of your business? Do you understand that?
Yeah, I mean, when you take a step back and we... it's like the name that no one wants to talk about, the pandemic, right? It's like it's the P. It's like the Voldemort of the conversation. I believe that was a catalyst in a lot of ways. A couple things happened. I think it changed consumer behavior in some ways.
Yeah.
And I think it changed, I think it accelerated how restaurants were thinking about embracing technology. But in doing so, having a lot of technology and a massive tech stack can actually overcomplicate your operations, right? So we did we commissioned a study with CensusWide. 40%, 41% of operators are looking to optimize their tech stack. I think it's the word optimize to me is the key word, because optimize doesn't mean more, nor does the definition of it, right?
Yep.
But it's like, how do you become as efficient as possible and then start consolidating that tech stack? Who are those? What's that technology that can actually help us power the front of house, you know, provide the best experience? And in doing so, though, if there's one single technology that can do everything, that's amazing. So what you have to do is you have to be the core of, like, so we are the heart, if you will, because we're bringing in the customer data. But in doing so, you have to make it as easy as possible to integrate, like integrate with the POS system,
yeah,
or like other types of tech that can help support. So you need to make that ecosystem as easy as possible, because optimizing is key, because with all the challenges right now, especially with, you know, staffing, you
pick
know,
one.
And costs, I mean, pick one, right?
Yeah.
So trying to simplify that process and taking the load off as much as possible, that is a big piece of our focus right now, is making sure that we can reduce the load on the average operator. But it's not just the operator, you know, we're working with the sales groups, right? We're working with marketing too. So trying to bring all of that in.
Yeah, because you do touch each department, don't you? I mean, depending on how big the business is, obviously. But in the larger businesses, you're working across three probably verticals, aren't you, in terms of operations, sales, and marketing, ensuring that they've all got the right information at the right time.
Yeah. I mean...
It sucks to be you.
Well, you know, my heart always goes out to our operators in the restaurants. That's a big piece, which is, you know, we're certainly... The big piece is, like I said, bringing in, we have all this rich data set.
Yeah.
So then how can we help each of the groups? How can we help the sales team drive, you know, more covers? But we've really been leaning in on the marketing side. We have a marketing automation. So I was talking about those tags that are being automated. So that is something you just turn on, and basically those are automated going out. So first time visitor, come back.
So it automatically tags.
Yeah.
So if I'm a lapsed customer, for instance, it will understand that.
Yeah.
I haven't been in for a while, and then tag me as that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you can also manually create your own tags too, but we actually have automated tagging in the back to relieve. And then, so that's one piece, but the other one is like, well, how can you help me, you know, not only automate and go after these individuals, but we're also trying to bring people back in different, or maybe we're doing an event.
Yeah.
Right. Or maybe there's some type of, you know, special that we'd like to promote. So we actually have also, now we're taking all of that information data, and we also have an email marketing tool that you can use along with the marketing automation. So we're really, really leaning in and supporting our marketing
because it
teams.
Makes sense, right? If totally. Your customer data is in one place, then you should be able to then market from that data.
That's right. Yeah. So now when you think about optimizing your tech stack, well, okay, well, you can lean on us to, like, yeah. you know, support your marketing efforts and really drive that loyalty, which I was talking about, back to those restaurants. I mean, that's...
I was going to say loyalty is probably every podcast I do right now, we end up, or every operator I speak to, I end up back at loyalty because... they're trying to find this ecosystem where loyalty works at every touch point. So drive through, on-premise, off-premise, gift vouchers, you know, you name it, reward. And it seems to be that the next, like you said, a lot of it's come in, but I think now people are sitting there saying, I bought it, but I haven't used it, or it's not working, or, and it's about that journey now to that point where they find loyalty as an ecosystem that really gives back.
So Chris, why do you think loyalty is so important right now? Well, what is driving that?
Well, I think you've got a personal attachment to a brand. Mm. So we just mentioned American Airlines and Apple.
Yeah.
But on a smaller scale, I've got an attachment to a local farm shop, like, for instance, near my house, where I'll go and buy produce and whatnot. But also because of money, right? Because I need to be, my money's worth more now than it ever was before. Mm. So my £50 spend that I'd spent 3-4 years ago is much more important now because it's more valuable, you know. And I've got 3 kids; it's nothing's cheap, right? So everything becomes expensive. So that's where I think loyalty is key because you've got to. There's the Raving Fans book, which I'm sure you've probably read at some point. It talks all about bringing these people back into experiences, and but you have to add value and you have to reward.
Yeah,
in my mind.
Well, I think you bring up a great point, which is this notion of discretionary spending right now, too. Right, so you want to feel the greatest impact of who you're spending your money with. And I think it's that sense of belonging.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that is carried through the history of mankind.
Yeah. Isn't it? Like,
right.
A sports fan.
It's a sport. Yeah. Like, we want to be part of a tribe. We want that feeling of that belonging. And so we call it loyalty. But at the end of the day, people want to feel like they're a part of something that is special, that differentiates that piece from everything else. And I think that's why we always kind of go after this attachment of and notion of loyalty.
Yeah.
And sure as hell, in hospitality. They're trying, I mean, that is, you know, especially coming off, and I'll go back to it, this conference, which is, that's what they are, their primary focus is driving this sense of belonging.
I was going to say, you said you got corners, probably not the right word, but you had some time with the customers after, I think it was called Shift, right?
Shift.
Yeah, called Shift. And what are they asking for, I suppose? If you had to kind of pinpoint one particular thing they're all trying to chase at the moment, is it loyalty, or is there different things for different brands?
I think the loyalty piece is something that we are delivering. I know that we are helping them deliver that. You know, our product is robust. It can do a lot, right? I mean, it's really impressive the things it can do around supporting your front of house. You know, there's algorithms behind the scene to make sure that you know when you're supposed to be turning tables, how you're turning them, what you're going to be doing. It's really impressive. So oftentimes we're thinking of, like, little, oh, can we make a little tweak here?
Yeah.
You know, this help. But sometimes it's, you know, specific to their business. So we have to kind of, like, okay, because a lot of our feedback comes from our product roadmap is directly reflected from the customers we're speaking to. So
it's hard though, right? If you have one versus, when did you start building? Because I spent some time in DeliverAct as in product there a year ago. And I used to find it interesting that feedback would come in and maybe they would react to, you know, it's very easy to react to one customer's feedback, right? Where 10,000 might not tell you anything, but then one might say, this is really bad, I don't like it, get rid of it. Or I need this straight away, build it. How do you kind of differentiate? And maybe it's not your job, maybe it's someone else's product.
No, you know, it's not my job explicitly, but it is. So my teams make up the pre-sale, the sales, the onboarding support.
So you're on the journey.
Yeah, so I'm on the customer journey. So my job is working with our product team, who's absolutely brilliant, and then bringing this feedback. But part of it is, what are the one-offs, you know, that we can address, you know, in certain instances, or is there, like, one dot does not make a trend, right? But when you're starting to see multiple dots, like, okay, this is something we can consider.
Yeah.
That's why we leaned in on the marketing side. That was a big ask from our restaurants. It was like, help us bring butts back into seats and drive that, because so much has changed.
And they want it in one place, do you think? Is that the...
Yeah.
Yeah. They want to link, well, talking about dots again, they want to join the dots, right? So they've everything on one system. Because I think after the pandemic, as you mentioned, I think there was a lot of logins. There's a lot of, you know, people going onto different platforms, finding different stuff. And there's a big discussion around best in class versus all in one place. But you're not going to do EPOS, I presume, and all that kind of stuff. You guys are really managing the customer.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, we're helping our restaurant partners and hotels provide the best experience for their customers, right? I mean, we are the CRM.
Yeah.
We're the heart. So now that could mean that we, like I said before, we may integrate with different systems to make that as easy and seamless as possible for them to pull that information if they're using a different part of a tech stack. But at the end of the day, we're the ones that are basically, because the restaurants want to own the data.
Yeah.
They want to understand their customer, right? And so they want to have a centralized place where they can leverage and pull that information so that they can provide those types of experiences in the future.
And I think they've gone through stages with data recently. They've got obviously the delivery guys came along, 5-10 years ago, and the aggregators came, and they kind of own the data, they keep it. So I feel like the industry felt like they missed out there. They're still missing out, but they're starting to take some control back and, manage it in-house. But there's a lot of that data that sits on the other side of the fence, so they've been burnt a little bit, I think, in the past.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we have always come from the stance of operator first.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you think about the marketplace, they're maybe looking at consumer first, right? So moving the having that consumer information, and they want to leverage that data. And so we've always been kind of, really behind the scenes. I mean, even when you make a reservation, there's a little seven rooms, tag at the bottom, but you really don't know. The experience you're experiencing feels like it's white labeled directly with that restaurant. And that's what we want to, we had an experience working with a Nobu and Park Lane Road, and they wanted to really own the experience. We white labeled that for them. I mean, they saved like 317,000 pounds in eight months.
Wow.
From third parties. And then they drove another 27,000 pounds.
I was about to ask you actually, because you brought up cash, but data and revenue is obviously entirely linked. And we said right at the start of the podcast there that obviously, your role or Seven Rooms want to help drive revenue because it's the lifeblood of, it's the oxygen for a restaurant, right? And how quickly can you see data being linked to revenue in terms of moving forwards?
Well, we have the great thing is we can actually directly show the impact of your what you're doing from your marketing, basically the strategy that you're driving. We have a dashboard that will show, you sent this out, this has been the response, this is what they spent, because it all ties back into our system.
Yeah.
So the word ROI gets thrown around so much, right? Like
ROI on tech is literally keeps me awake.
Right. But it's a beautiful thing because you can actually, because we have the data, and then you're seeing out to the customers that are already in the system, you know exactly when they're coming back, how much you're spending, and what you're getting. That's beautiful.
The best, right? That's what I love tech, where you can actually see physically on the screen, I did that, I got this.
Right.
And that's quite hard sometimes in workforce management or inventory. I mean, not inventory, actually, you can see result. But in a lot of the tech that people buy, it's very hard to kind of link the two results together. But in this case, you could quite clearly see, I did that on a Tuesday afternoon, this is the result, I'm going to try it on Wednesday next week.
Well, I mean, people talk, you see all these white papers and it's like, delivered 10X revenue, delivered 20X, but show it to me. Show it to me every single time I am performing an action.
Yeah.
And by the way, sometimes those ROIs are not great.
Yeah, but that's fine, right? Because you're learning.
Okay. At least you're learning from that, and you can evolve from the process instead of just being like, well, I'm assuming I'm going to get, 50X return, which is just not the case.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the, operators are great people. I always say if they had product ability, they just build their own products, they wouldn't even bother with you guys. They just go do it themselves, right?
Yeah.
But they don't have that capability. So, and I think having that, they have that gut, as I said, that real operator gut. But having that tangible, failing is not bad as long as you don't do it again.
Yeah.
And I think knowing that is really useful. And how quickly, so I suppose if I was a mid-market chain and I switched on with you tomorrow and started using the marketing, the CRM side of things, how quickly could I see kind of some impact? I mean, we're not talking 10X, but in any kinds of positive impact?
Well, I think the important thing is, first and foremost, once you're up and running, you can see it immediately.
Yeah.
Because, we also give you the ability to slice and dice the personas that you want to be messaging to. Because obviously, because of the tagging, you want to send different messages to different people at different times. You can see the, there are some basics that all the email campaigns can do. They can show open rate and those things. But we're actually pulling it back into the system because we're showing, oh, these people actually responded, they're coming back, and this is how much they actually spent coming back. So you can, you, the dashboard is real time, immediate. You can see what those campaigns are doing and what they're delivering for you.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I just come back to my old life.
I mean, I always say these things are made automagically. You know, I'm not sure what's happening behind the scenes. I just know that it happens, you know.
We're running out of time slowly, but I wanted to, what is your picture of the industry? I mean, it's firstly in London. How long have you been here? Have you just been a few days or?
Yeah, I just got here on Sunday.
Oh, okay. So I can't touch you too much then.
Struggling through sleep, but it's fine.
I don't know if you've been here much in the past, but what's your experience of, I suppose, a European type tech and hospitality compared to what you have over in the States?
I'll go back to the fact that in this region, I would say, you know, EMEA and specifically in London, they really lean in to technology, and they are less reliant on, you know, maybe those marketplaces outside because they've got, you know, the strong brand.
Yeah.
They want to drive that loyal base. Now, like, there's a lot of competition, naturally.
Isn't there ever?
A lot of challenges. But they're always through the lens of, you know, I said before, like, how to optimize and take a risk and take a chance on certain types of areas to try things out, to deliver a different type of experience. And, you know, we see that in London and certainly also, you know, in Sydney and Melbourne. You know, North America still is a very strong market for us. They're probably a little bit, as far as advancing technology-wise, which is really interesting, probably a little bit behind.
It's so strange because you would think the opposite, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you really wouldn't. Yeah, it's really interesting.
And someone was telling me as well that cash is still quite a thing in America, in the North Americas, compared to over here where we're pretty much cashless everywhere.
Yeah, I would say I'm as a consumer, I'm cashless.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm using my Apple Watch for
payment
everywhere.
I just don't remember the last time I had cash on me.
You know, and whenever I travel now, if I want a tip or something like that, I never have cash in my wallet.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge.
You need to use tip jar. There you go, James. Yeah. Shout out for you.
Yeah. But I'll hit the tip jar here.
Yeah. But it's really interesting. And how's your experience been then? Obviously, you had all your people here yesterday. You've got how long are you here for? Are you here for another week?
Yeah, I'm here till Sunday. The experience has been great. You know, one of the things that they're really trying to get support around is how do they optimize their systems? And what I mean by that is the consumer, we had some great conversations. The consumer behavior is changing. They're finding that more people are going out to dinner earlier. They're finding that food is increasing. Alcohol is coming down a bit.
Yeah.
They are seeing the work from home challenging on Mondays and Fridays. And then if public transportation doesn't seem to be working,
that's something we're not mature with in London.
So that'll have an impact, right? So they're looking at how can we optimize our book. You know, they've got, you know, we have a strong you know, Saturday and Sunday, and then they've got the shoulder days. So we just released a new tool for them called Revenue Management, which is if you took this an analyst who knew seven rooms backwards, forwards, in every single capacity, and then you package that up and put it into to the product to show the restaurant, oh, hey, you know what? On these days, month over month, you're down, you should consider making a change or providing, you know, at the reservation, maybe you're doing an upsell for them as they go through the reservation, or maybe drive more people to come on these Tuesdays, which are, so we've created this platform for them to optimize their operations, which is huge because that can help from the efficiency of the people that are working there, right? And that's a big piece. Like,
well, I always say that about revenue. People just say it's revenue, but actually it's a lean back into everything else.
Yeah.
Payroll, sales and marketing, food waste, you pick one, right? All the costs that fall out the back door that no one ever really notices. That's why I always talk about the optics from the tech companies into the industry that actually that your product will make an impact everywhere.
Yeah.
Not just in one, because we're so interlinked. All the products are so interlinked. It's like here today, you can see it's very quiet because it's half term and all the office workers are hiding because they don't want to come here when all the kids are here. And they're all off as well, right, probably. Yeah. So they all talk here quite a lot, but they've got a co-working space called the dog desks up at the top there. And they are insane, so busy. But Friday, no one here. Monday, no one here. So that pattern is firmly entrenched in the UK. I don't know if it's the same in the States, but it's really much living here.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the conversation around this remote work, right? And it's, on one hand, it certainly can be beneficial, but you think of the fabric of our community. The DNA of the community is really restaurants, from my perspective.
Yeah, like food that, is everything.
Food is everything.
Look at me.
Right? You look great, Chris. You're good. But and you don't realize the indirect impact. And to be quite frank, I don't think I had thought about it as much in coming to this point. And so, you know, the space isn't fighting against it. They're just trying to find ways that it is what it is right now.
Yeah.
So how can we still bring people in, provide those moments of magic,
yeah,
right? And if there are days that we know that are going to be slower, how do we optimize those days too?
Love it. And someone was telling me the other day actually that table sizes have increased. Mm. I can't remember who it was. One of my many tech friends was telling me that actually the twos are turning into fours again.
That's
because
great.
People are coming for more, I suppose, like birthday celebrations kind of thing. They're coming out. So there seems to be more. Whereas after the pandemic, we were forced to dine alone or dine in twos in our bubbles or whatever it was. So anyway, let's not talk about the P word. So what about the future then? So 7 years, you've just released revenue management. Mm-hmm. Anything else coming up? I mean, you've got a lot. I was looking and there's like 15, 16 features. I don't know. It's a healthy product.
There's a lot, and I'll go back to the fact that a lot of it is from the request of the customers. So, you know, we have a priority wait list. So it's not just your standard wait list. Actually, you can look at, okay, hey, Chris, you're a VIP here. You're on the wait list. So you may get priority to get a table when that comes up.
Yeah.
So traditional kind of wait lists are just basically first come, first serve.
Yes.
So we're looking at, because we have all that rich data, when you do reserve a table and you're on the wait list, you may get priority. You get bumped.
I like that.
Right?
I was saying you need a face for bumping back in the day, right? In the day, it was like, oh, yeah, he looks nice.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, now data is doing it for me. Love that.
That's
good.
Right. How do you choose a restaurant usually? When you haven't gone to, what usually informs you to go to a restaurant?
Probably either word of mouth, because I'm old school. And I'm old and I've got lots of friends who kind of, we eat out a lot, I suppose, our age. Yeah. But also, I use Google a lot, but my kids use TikTok all the time.
Yeah, part of the panel actually was talking about how TikTok is having significant influence.
Huge.
Google naturally is huge. But to your point, like 70% is still word of mouth.
Yeah.
That's a big piece. So we're like, okay, that's great. So Chris, you come into Nobu, you go there, you know, five times, you know, Sticks and Sushi, one of my favorite ones too. So when you go in, you could get a link and then you can share that link with someone. And then maybe when that person comes in, like, ooh, Chris recommended you. Oh, Brent, thanks for coming in. Chris recommended you. You're going to get a free bottle of Prosecco.
Oh, so like a champion,
that's right. Yeah. That's right. And now you're also giving so now that restaurant wants to make sure Brent has a great experience because
you're my friend.
Because I'm your friend. Right? So they're going to make sure you have a great experience. And then what happens when I have a great experience there?
You just tell everyone else.
I'm going to tell everybody
else.
It's
like the old iceberg theory.
I'm
going to
be coming back.
Yeah.
And you can, and now, and they can track that in their system, which is, you know, which is key. And the other one we're doing too, is basically being able to have a direct line of communication, to the host. If you're like a VIP too, to be able to text like, hey, do you have something available? To create that interaction.
Love that. So like almost like a last minute type scenario where I'm just in town and feel like dropping in.
Yep.
I feel like a VIP. I'm going to try it tonight. I stay at a place called The Other House up in South Kensington in London. There, you should check them out, actually. I don't know if they use seven rooms. I'm not sure.
I haven't heard of it.
But they're quite big, like a Soho house. They're just building a few properties around here. But they are excellent at that. They do the corner bar Boston thing very, really well. But I'm not really experiencing that digitally. So maybe if you're listening, guys, you should speak to Brent.
Right.
But yeah. And also, if I buy the product finally, can I buy it in modules kind of thing? Or do I once I buy seven rooms, do I get everything? How does it work?
That's a great question. It's actually, it is broken up into packages.
Right.
So based on the needs of the restaurant or the hotel, we've broken up into three different types of packages that can give you exactly what you're looking for based on what the product, what your needs, what the product can actually provide. So we try to make it flexible, you know, to make sure we're giving like the right solution to
We know you'll always help us if we need it.
And I can probably get you a deal.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'll have to build a restaurant first. But And on that note, if people want to get hold of you and are interested in looking at Seven Rooms a bit further, maybe getting a demo, how do they get hold of you?
Yeah, well, you can go to the website directly, which is we have an area there you can set up a demo. And if you have questions, honestly, brent.krause@sevenrooms.com.
I'll help you out. Brave man. I was going to say, you're going to set up your own VIP list for people like it.
That's right.
I'm going to start sending you links. Yeah.
I'll bump you up, Chris. I'll bump you up.
Very cool. Look, thank you very much. I appreciate you're still kind of, you've come straight here on Sunday. You've gone straight to your first show on Monday. And now you're podcasting Tuesday morning. It hasn't been the easiest start to your week in London, no?
No, it's been great. It's been a lot of fun. And every single time I'm here, I am always convinced that I'm probably going to live here at some point in time.
Yes, I like that. And where are you going? What's the rest of the week look like? Customers and...
Yeah, more customers, some more customer visits. I'm going to go to the office. So we brought everybody here for the most part. So everybody's at the office. Yeah. So I'm going to go back there, spend some time. And also, interestingly, because my daughter has this week off also, my wife and my daughter came out.
Ah, I was going to say, you brought them with you.
Brought them with me. So I'm going to spend some time with them.
Where are they? Spending some money somewhere?
100%. Yeah. Right? Yeah, talk about discretionary spending.
Yeah, they're not. Right, really, really cool. You can find Seven Rooms on the Marketplace, guys. Go check them out. The podcast will be out probably in a few weeks, so you'll be able to hear it there as well. Thank you very much, Brent. Appreciate it, and enjoy your stay in London.
Yeah, Chris, absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.